Welcome to this episode of the 9420 podcast, where we talk about the music that we love and the industry that we tolerate. Everyone, and welcome to this episode of the 9420 podcast. That was World in Decline by Carl Alaco. Hi, Carl and Greg. How are you both doing?
You know what? I'm kind of stunned by that track.
Why?
I heard that version of that track when I was trying to decide whether or not I wanted to court you to bring you to the Performing Rights Organization. And it struck me because I remember one particular line in that song, and I said, I have got to work with this songwriter. It's a very strange line. I think I've told you before, it was the line that drew me in. It's animators rub their worn out wrists. I thought that was just so brilliant. And like the idea that was so incredibly visual and unmistakable in one line of a song. I got to meet this guy. I got to work with this guy. It sounds bizarre, but
funny that track.
It's got a lot of energy, man.
My only political song ever. Every line is about something. Like, it talks about the 80s. You know, I think it's one of my best lyrics ever.
Yeah, I agree.
Jam packed with so much. I can't even remember the lines. I sing that song live too, and I just rattle off those words. You know,
it's very stream of consciousness. You know. It's your American Pie, dude.
Well, kind of, except it's not as positive, man. You know, world in decline.
Made a little less money.
Everything's that, but the joke was, and that was back in the 80s, I'm writing this. So the world, yeah. I think almost every line in that song is appropriate today.
It's funny, when we recut that for the Gray album, I think we were basically exactly on the same meter on the BPMs. I don't think that's any faster, but it's got more energy.
The difference with this song, this recording, like it was, I did it like with Reeves up in Boston, you know, this guy, Tom Doobie, this producer.
Reeves
Gabrel, who's played with Bowie. And I think right now he's currently in the Cure with Robert Smith, you know, and anyway, Reeves is a great guitarist, and the bass player and the drummer, they were this alternative, you know, Boston underground vibe we had.
Yeah, it's very punky at the beginning, and then I like how it kind of goes into, like, the end is very Quadrophenia, you know?
Well, because what happened was, you know, when I was doing that, I was coming off, I hadn't been in bands in a while, I was doing the Charlie Dog solo songwriter thing, and that was my first introduction to being in a band again. You know, so I had a band, because none of these songs were ever recorded before. They're all just acoustic singer-songwriter songs I used to perform, you know, around Northeast, you know. Yeah. So when I met these guys, how do we arrange this stuff? Because it's all just singer-songwriter stuff. So this is where it went, you know, it just went like, one thing I love about Reeves, he never likes to do what he did before again. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when you record with Reeves, he plays one line and he goes, "That's great." He goes, "Now do the part." "Oh, well, let's just cut it again. I'll see what happens." And he goes, "But Reeve, I like that part." "Yeah, but we can do it again." And he never like wants to like repeat himself. He just wants to improv always.
That's kind of cool.
And it is kind of cool, but sometimes it's infuriating because when he stumbles on a good part.
Oh, yeah.
Keep it. No, well, the next one could be better.
How did you get, do you remember how you produced that kind of, there's towards the end of the track, it's almost like a children's chorus. Did you use some kind of chorus effect or?
I was doing my Bowie impressions where we just like sing the line again, double the words, just keep, Bowie had this thing back on like Lodger and Low days where he would like just talk the same lyric over. So we were just trying all these stupid things like and just doubling up and tripling in.
Well, that was exciting to hear. Good.
Yeah, I love it. I'm,
you can go to the well a lot. You know?
I have a big well.
Well, and I think it was a great way to start off our 115th episode, too.
Yay. 15 good ones. 115 good ones.
Anyway. So that's it. That's the song. So what are we talking? Are we talking about anything?
Well, I think we've got a couple things to talk about. But the first thing I wanted to bring up is the fact that it's pretzel salad week. This is now my third year knowing that this week is dedicated to pretzel salad and Greg's favorite dessert.
When we get off here, text me your address and you may find a small pretzel salad in your post office box for the holiday weekend.
You could just leave it at the doorstep because our post office box is in a neighborhood community thing. So
I actually sent a picture of pretzel salad basically in storage for tomorrow's blessed event. I sent it to my daughter-in-law and she did a wee, you know, she's obsessed with it. So
the most gelatinous dessert there is on earth.
He used to talk about all the different casseroles and stuff from the Midwest, you know, like the green bean casserole and the ambrosia and all these weird kind of Midwestern based high caloric dishes that everybody had to have at the holidays. Pretzel salad is definitely that.
You want to hear something funny? This has nothing to do with that. So, you know, you ever see how, like, on Facebook, they have these questions. If you were in a record store and had to buy only one of these albums, what would you buy? So there was this picture of Van Halen's debut album, Metallica's debut album, Judas Priest's debut album, and, like, Rat's debut album, something like that, right? And it said, if you were in a record store and you're going to buy one of these, which one would you buy? So I wrote, I would probably go to the better record store with a better selection. You know how many hate mail things I got? I got, hey, buddy, what's wrong with you? What are you doing here? How could you not? Like, you know, I live with 7 or 8 guys made a point to write to me, what's your problem, buddy? Like, cause
that's hilarious. That's hilarious.
God, it's like, why even answer the question then if you can't get into the music?
Well, I never respond to those things that are open to the public, because it's just like you just get inundated. And the way, I don't know the way your phone works, but the way my phone works, that if I say something, every single person that posts to that account, you know, it dings me every time.
You can turn off your notifications.
You can.
Need to do that. But it's like, I had it happen to me just the other day. I sent a picture around and I didn't realize, I think that Facebook scammed me. I think that they're making certain posts public, even though you only want them seen and commented by the people that you follow and your friends. But I put up this picture of pancake syrup that is Fruity Pebbles flavored.
That sounds terrible.
It looks like the most horrific, most poisonous thing you could ever put in your body. And all of a sudden it gets like 75 or 100 shares. You know, I made the comment, I don't know if we're going to survive as a species with this kind of crap. But yeah, it was just nuts. People were commenting on it.
Well, once someone shares it out to their network too, it becomes public to, like, whoever they have, and then they can comment on it. So it's a whole, if it gets shared, then it becomes kind of more public than you probably want it.
Do we have anything to talk about that's real?
Oh, I have something that's been on my mind. I wanted to create a little segment. I don't know how often we'll do it, but do you have some music for me for my new segment?
Well, first, what are we calling the new segment?
I'm calling it Fix Your Pitch.
Okay, so now, ladies and gentlemen, we have Greg's new segment.
I've been watching these videos, countless videos. I think it's brought about by the idea that you go see a concert now, almost everybody has a high-quality video camera in their hand, by nature of taking their phones in. And so there are thousands of hours of video out there on live performances. And I think because people are videoing them, I think maybe some artists are getting kind of busted on the idea that they really need to fix their performances. Some of them shouldn't be out there. And we've talked about this before, but I figured we'd do a segment called Fix Your Pitch.
So who's the winner this week?
I hate to say it, but I hate to remember it to Nicole, but I talked about a pitch problem that Ed Sheeran had.
Yes, you did.
Last year with his guitar. And maybe I'm just overly sensitive, but I'm hearing a lot of things that are really, really, really out of tune and out of pitch. This week's winner, Stevie Nicks. To be fair, I'm using the last 10 uploaded live performance videos on YouTube in order to nominate artists for the award. The live vocals that I heard from Stevie Nicks over the last 10 uploaded videos are absolutely atrocious. You know, I'm a Stevie Nicks fan. I think she's a brilliant writer. I loved her in bands. I loved her solo career. I'm a big fan. But the fact of the matter is that she is just not singing well at all. And I'm thinking these people have such notoriety and there's so much money at stake on these tours that I think they have people working for them that don't want to risk the gig, and they won't tell them that they don't sound good.
That's always the case, though. Like, if someone can profit from it, they're not going to say anything.
McCartney knows he can't hit those notes. Stevie Nicks knows she's flat. Come on. They've been in business for a long time. They don't care. Or they're fooling themselves. They're deluding themselves. They know.
Well,
you know. I know what
would happen if somebody on their production crew were to go to her and say, you know, the quality of performance is really not there.
Why should they say that? They're working a job. They were hired to do it.
Yeah, they're hired to, like, twiddle knobs. And the reality of it is that you get an inferior product back out. I don't know why these people don't have more self-awareness. I really don't. And it's going to be interesting to see.
Self-awareness isn't cost-effective.
Yeah, and there,
well,
it also
it's
going to
be interesting.
It also plays into the greed, too. They know that they can still make money off of it, so why not? Until someone comes to them and says,
you know what? I want to be attributed that quote. Self-awareness is not cost-effective.
I agree with you. I think it.
That's a good quote.
Now, I'll tell you how we are going to see the antithesis of this, okay? It's come out in the news that Springsteen's going on tour next year.
Right.
There won't be a bad note in 25 shows.
Oh, disagree. We'll disagree. See, Springsteen.
Well, I'm telling you.
Springsteen is not a pitch singer anyway. So, you know.
Well, but what I'm saying is he's self-aware enough.
Yeah, as long as he's doing what he's doing.
He's self-aware enough to not
put crap. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he can do. You know, who knows, man? You know, at this point, I don't know anymore.
Fix your pitch.
Well, this segment sucks. Okay.
So, Greg, I'm actually very glad that you brought up Bruce Springsteen.
Best part of that segment is that song.
I know. But I'm glad you brought up Springsteen because it jogged my memory from seeing an article I was reading last week.
$8,000 tickets for first
row. In comparison to the Taylor Swift Ticketmaster debacle or Ticketgator, whatever they're calling it, in how for however many tours that he's been doing for however many years, he's always kind of kept it in-house, like in terms of ticket sales and making sure that the prices were good. And then this time he told his team, let's do what everyone else is doing. And they signed on with Ticketmaster. And lo and behold, there's tickets that are going for $5,000, which has never happened before. So it's this price gouging thing that Ticketmaster does. It's beyond bonkers. And they canceled Taylor Swift's general sale to the public because, according to them, they didn't realize that they were going to get hit with so many people and they didn't do it correctly. And I think it shines a big light on how much.
Why are they allowed? Who let them do that? Who, in essence, allowed them? Maybe I haven't kept up on this. I don't go to any shows. Who allows them? Was there a law that was passed that allows them to become legal scalpers, basically?
And the thing is, there are some states that are taking action against Ticketmaster right now in terms of like litigation and investigations. And I think a couple of places have filed like antitrust suits with them because there's no other company that really does what Ticketmaster does. And like a lot of venues won't work with you unless you use Ticketmaster. So there's definitely something that was shown in this as to like, well, why did Taylor have to use Ticketmaster? And because of this whole thing, like what's going to be done from it? So I don't know what the answer is, but it just.
What I read was that Springsteen, what he was quoted as saying was he seemed to be on the side of Ticketmaster. He was like, yeah, $5,000. I mean, you know, it's kind of the marketplace, which surprised me because I know that previous times in his career, he's not allowed people to buy the first 15 rows on Ticketmaster and then resell.
He's 73 years old now. He doesn't care.
I guess he doesn't care. I think you're right. I think it's simply what the market will bear. I think that's what it is. What the market.
It's not even that. Like, it's also like a feature within Ticketmaster that's called price matching or something like that. Like, based off of the demand and volume, they can fluctuate the prices, even though if you set it at something else. So if there's a lot of people going for a $59 ticket, they can raise it up to 80 or 90.
If there's so much demand for these shows, I don't understand why some artist doesn't say, you know what, I'll just find a sponsor and I'll play 50, 100,000 seat shows. If it looks like there's an unlimited number of people that will come see you, then just sell it to an advertiser and stop gouging individuals.
I don't know what the answer is, but it's definitely not what happened last week with Ticketgate and all that happened. So
I think it's all stupid. I think the world is just like, you know, I don't know. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And like, and everyone just complains, but nothing changes.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue into featuring our artist of the week this week, which is Straw House and their latest single, It Was Beautiful, because it was all beautiful back in the day. But let's hear a little bit about the place that 9420 came to be, and then we'll listen to Straw House's latest single, It Was Beautiful.
This episode is officially, unofficially sponsored by Bongo Java. Bongo Java, the birthplace of the 9420 podcast. While Bongo Java got its start a year earlier than 9420 in 1993, in 1994, Carl and Greg's relationship got started. And in 2020, Carl and Greg visited Bongo Java to create this podcast that you listen to. For more information on Bongo Java, go to bongojava.com.
Colors on the hillside, branches swaying in the wind. Heaven never felt so close, time never stretched so thin.
I like that so much.
I love that too. It was amazing.
Okay,
actually.
So can you guys give me a little props to this? Because I found them. If you all remember, my little brother got me a concert at the Ryman like way back in September. We went to go see Watch House, and their opening act was like Foghorn String Band or something like that. But in that, because we listened to so much of it, Spotify kept giving me new folk music to listen to. And Straw House was turned on to me because they didn't have a single out yet, but they were talked about by someone. And then I followed them on Instagram, and they sent us their single before it was out. So their single came out, I believe, in like mid-September. I've been so excited to feature them. Neither one of you heard this before.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Spotify, because when you played this for me, or when you sent it to us, I went out and listened to it again on Spotify, and then the exact same thing happened. They started spitting all these Americana heartland stuff, and they started spitting it all out. So I found like 10 new bands by virtue of putting them into Spotify.
Yeah.
That's how you found them, is by listening to Spotify.
You need to send me those bands too if you want them featured.
I just think they're terrific. It harkens back to a period in the 70s that there was this kind of heartland type of songwriting and music being made, but it was almost on the fringes of rock. It was kind of dark around the edges. People like, Joe Ely and Southern Hillman Fury Band and Nitty Gritty Dirt Band made some really cool records in the mid-70s. I just think the stuff is great.
What I liked about this, though, it reminded me of, like, those bands were a bit more concise, you know, with instrumentation. What I liked about this group, it reminded me of, like, the band back in like in the late 60s, you know, in up in Woodstock, when they were just these guys in the basement picking out stuff, and the guitar's a little mixed loud, and the bass drum's a little too this, and a little more echo, and maybe the vibe. They didn't care.
A little more ethereal.
But the whole, you know, it's not this perfect thing, but it is, because it's just so authentically just honest.
Yeah.
That's a great notion. You know, just it was beautiful. And his voice is just really like endearing.
I hope they join our licensing program.
But that's easily.
Yeah, that I can hear that in so many different things.
We can get that song as the closing credit for Yellowstone.
Oh, that would be awesome.
We can just get it there.
You're right. That could easily be in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys want to get to know the duo? Because they did answer our questions of the week. All right, so the first question that we asked Straw House is to tell us a little bit about themselves.
My name is Joey Lee, and I'm lead vocals and guitar for Straw House. I've been playing music for about 20 years and professionally playing for about 12 or so. I started Straw House with my writing partner, Matt Mayer, and about 2 years ago in the pandemic. We both got together and started playing music and writing, and eventually the 6 songs we wrote came about from it. We released our first song, It Was Beautiful, and our first single, and are setting to release 5 more and then an album with 8 songs on it. We have a lot of plans to start touring and keep going, and we're really excited for everything coming up.
Cool. He's,
yeah, cool. I mean, very cool. He sounds nothing like what I thought he was going to sound like, but...
What are you going to sound like, boned in?
I don't know what I thought, but like he just very well spoken is all I will say.
My favorite band in this genre is a band, I think they claim they're from Nashville, but it's a band called Lamb Chop. So if our listeners have not been exposed to them, check them out as well.
I'll make sure to link them in the show notes. But the second question that we asked Straw House is, what music artists have influenced your career so far?
One of my first artists that inspired me was Lynyrd Skynyrd a long time ago in my first band. And the Allman Brothers, they inspired my guitar playing, how I learned songwriting, and just basically building a song. More recently, the Lumineers, the Old Avett Brothers, a lot of folk bands, a lot of good songwriters, John Denver, James Taylor, just kind of getting into the actual lyrics of the song. You know, can't go by without saying Bob Dylan, not the singing as much as the writing, but love listening to old folk bands, and even still a lot of rock bands that have been writing great lyrics. So a lot of people that have been inspiring us lately, you know, Lumineers being my favorite recently.
So what's the final question we asked Straw House?
The final Nicole? Question that we asked Straw House, and it'll be the last time it is shared on this podcast, is if you could change one thing in the music industry, what would it be?
I would say the one thing that I would change in the music industry would just be keep the originality of the artist. A lot of times when artists will go through playing and be scouted by a person, they'll get picked up and then slowly they'll start to be molded into something that the producer or the record label wants, and can then kind of loses its touch because the originality of the artist is what kind of gave them the shine for everything that they did and the lyrics they wrote, the songs they wrote. Obviously, I understand sometimes it's to make them better, sometimes it's to push them, but sometimes they do kind of erase the originality of the artist, and the originality is what brought people there to begin with.
It never makes them better.
When they get signed?
A record company's influence on any act has never made them better. That's a fact.
I don't know.
No. I will agree, because one of the biggest gripes my husband has is the fact that Zac Brown Band started off really good and then they completely sold out. And they
maybe make them sell more records, yeah, and maybe make them look better and neater in videos, but do they make them better as an artist? Mm-mm. No. The record label made the Beatles better or made Pink Floyd better? Come on.
Let's. I think this deserves a little bit of research and a little bit of thought, because that's a major, major statement you're making there.
So what? I always make them. I don't care.
Well, there are records that I've... Aren't there bands that you heard their little homemade independent releases and then they came out with a debut on a major and it was like an event?
I don't think that's the label.
You put them on the map. You didn't experience that?
Yeah, never.
I don't know.
Well, I think a better question is, do the record labels actually have the best interest of the artist at heart? And I think a lot of the times people are going to say no. They want to make more money. So
I think the labels are largely irrelevant right now.
If I see a guy walk into the studio with like a man bun, that's it. If he's got a man bun, he's wearing a turtleneck and a man bun, I don't hear anything he has to say. That's what I'm saying.
I'll agree with Carl on that one.
You know, if he's wearing like, you know, cool boots, ripped jeans, you know, I know what I hate too, when he's got the t-shirt just tucked in under the belt buckle, but the rest of it's hanging out, and he's got a man bun, and he's got like six different things on his wrists. Like, what the hell is that?
He just described like three quarters of Nashville.
You know, like, you know, and like, what are you doing? You know, like, you know, and oh, come on. And you're going to tell me how to make an original record? Come on.
It seems like this is a great time for us to get on out of this episode. It's your new favorite sound.
It's the new theme song. Ladies and gentlemen, 9420 Podcast. And tonight we have Greg. Yeah.
You didn't like my segment. That's okay. You can keep that in that you don't like it.
I love your segment. Love it. It's the best. Let's, so tomorrow's Thanksgiving. What are we thankful for? Anything?
I'm thankful to get on out of this episode.
I'm thankful we're done. Okay, I'm thankful for that.
No, I am thankful for you both, so.
And I'm thankful for you two guys.
Likewise.
Get us out of this, please.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the 9420 Podcast. Make sure that you go to our website for all of the things that we spoke about, which is 9420.com. That is the numbers 94 and the letters TWENTY. Until next time, we'll talk to y'all later.